Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia.
Hello and welcome to Freedom of Species, the show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves of 3CR Community Radio. You just heard Sally with Out of the Pan, who had Shelley Karpathakis, sorry about that, the AGMC president, to talk about the Queer Multicultural Carnival at VPC on the 7th to 8th of August. So thanks, Sal.
You did well. That was a tough one.
Thank you. Check out of the Pan every Sunday, 12 to 1. And Sally just finished with the song The Way to Go Out by Hunters and Collectors. So I'm Lottie, and today I'm joined by Trev.
Hey, everyone. Oh, this microphone sounds a bit crackly. I might switch mics, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So today we're going to be talking about antinatalism and veganism and human population and what that means for the environment. So, yeah, I guess just a bit of background is that there's quite a somewhat large overlap between antinatalism and veganism. Antinatalism is the view that people have a duty not to procreate, not to have children. It seems like there's a bit of a pipeline from one to the other, and this, you know, maybe makes sense given that there are some kind of overarching or shared views between both. So, you know, both maybe share concerns about a lack of consent of bringing beings into the world and how much people and animals suffer when they're brought into the world. There are, yeah, I guess many vegans who think that farm and domesticated animals, we shouldn't be breeding them and that would mean that they should go extinct. And so this is kind of, I guess, human antinatalism is maybe a bit of a parallel view that humans are, you know, a net negative on the earth. Life would be better off without humans. And so we're going to discuss that today, kind of where we agree, where we disagree. I just thought I'd shout out here. Feel free to email in some feedback. fozradio@proton.me. We might read your feedback on a future show. I think I'll
or
be doing,
if you're quick even today, you never know.
Yeah. I think we'll be doing at least one other episode kind of about this topic. So it'd be, really interesting to hear what our listeners think.
Yeah. So does this microphone sound a bit better?
I think so, yeah.
Cool. That's good. You were saying about, antinatalism as being, you were saying it's like a, it's not just choosing not to have kids, is it? It's more than just a preference. It's
yes,
thinking
exactly.
That other people should do it too.
Yeah, I would say so. So I'll go through some definitions that might kind of clarify that a little bit.
Yeah,
so
cool. So
I think we can think of it as antinatalism is, maybe the idea that we have a duty and then, you know, maybe even like a pressure to not have children. On the flip side, pronatalism is the view that people have a duty or pressure that they should have children. And maybe, I guess a middle ground is kind of reproductive choice, is that people should have the option to do whichever. And then child-free is also a term that people use if they don't, you know, if they don't have children, and maybe more so if they're kind of empowered to not have children.
More of a personal choice.
Yeah. I think like my understanding, not that everyone would necessarily use it this way, but I think for the purpose of this discussion, child-free is like not really a political view or philosophical view. It's just this is my like personal preference, what I've chosen for my life, as opposed to this is what people should be doing. This is what the world should be doing.
Yeah. Similar to like, I know this is a bad analogy, but like someone that goes vegan just for their own health. It's not like a moral or a political, it's just like, oh, I'm doing this because I want my body to be a certain way.
Yes, yeah. And we might refer to that as more plant-based, whereas, you know, and again, people use the terms differently, but our kind of views as like, as political vegans is that we're doing it, but also there is an ethical incentive to do that. And we want their... You know, we'd like people to make the personal choice to go vegan. We'd also like the systems to change so that it becomes easier to eat vegan and be vegan. Yeah. So it's more of like a political system level thing.
Yeah.
And so I think you can think of antinatalism and pronatalism as like beyond just personal choices, but to like what is society doing to like pressure us into having children or not?
Yeah.
Maybe like just a few other kind of sub definitions to think about. A term that I came across is selective pronatalism. And this is the idea that certain people deserve to have children and others don't.
Oh, wow.
And that's basically eugenics. I think that's more like, colloquial term, I suppose, that like most people will recognize the term eugenicism. I don't know if people are identifying as selective pronatalists, but it's more that we can recognize some discourse as selective pronatalist.
They're not owning the label, but
I don't think so, not generally. But, you know, if people are saying that, I don't know, for example, like, oh, well, it's okay because I can give my children a good life because I have a lot of money, but people who don't have a lot of money can't give their children a good life. That's selective pronatalism, and that's, pretty harmful. And we'll get more into that, but that's kind of an example of that, I suppose. Another way to think about it is you can have like conditional or unconditional antinatalism. So unconditional antinatalism is basically the view that like it's never ethical to have children. Whereas conditional antinatalism, we can maybe think more in the context of now with like climate change and environmental disasters that I think there's, you know, like quite a few people out there who think that like now is not like now in the current world that we live in, it's not ethical to bring children into the world.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe they would think that 100 years ago it would have been like it was fine to
or even like
have children
100,000 years 100,000
like years
ago,
yes,
of,
or they might think, well, if we do manage to get ourselves out of these environmental catastrophes, if we move to a vegan food system in the future, it would be ethical for people to have children, but I don't think it is now. That's kind of the conditional versus unconditional side of it. And then we can think about antinatalism to kind of span humans, so whether humans should be procreating, domesticated animals, so the animals that where humans have control of, you know, like a lot of control over whether they're reproducing. You could think about it as like, should all sentient beings stop procreating and go extinct? Is that going to be better for like to reduce suffering? And also all life. So there are people out there who think that any suffering is bad, and therefore like destroying all life would be the more ethical option. I don't think we're going to cover that on we're not going to cover that here. For this episode, we're going to think more about human antinatalism and reproduction. I think that's probably where you see more overlap with vegans, and so I think it's a bit more of an interesting discussion. And I think today kind of what I want to get out of this episode is exploring these issues, and I guess thinking about if someone is antinatalist or not, what maybe we as vegans and social justice vegans maybe can agree on in terms of like activism and system level changes, even if we maybe have like different views in terms of, you know, whether we're antinatalist or things like that. So personally, I'm not an antinatalist or a pronatalist. I identify more with reproductive choice, and I'll go through some of my reasoning for that. Trev, did you want to kind of talk about your initial
views? So I don't really have like a clear, I guess, view at the moment as such, but I'm really interested in this topic because I know that it can, like, it's more than just a personal choice, people who hold these views. And because, as you said, there's a lot of overlap with vegan spaces or animal liberation spaces and some of these beliefs of antinatalism or pronatalism and everything in between that we talked about, the options. I think it's important for people to think about it because in similar ways to how there's been a lot of more critical discussion, especially in the last decade or so, about, you know, we want to question like what people's, you know, political beliefs are outside of veganism before they come into, you know, political animal liberation spaces. You know, we don't want racists, we don't want, you know, fascists, we don't want these other sort of people, you know, people that are like that, sexism.
Yeah, yeah.
Patriarchal sort of views and how they can harm the movement. So I think looking at the parallel with antinatalism, so trying to work out where this, so I guess summing it up, like on a total liberation perspective, like where does antinatalism fit in? Is it something that you need to have a hard stance against, or is it something that can be a bit more open to different personal opinion and it's still not going to, like, does it require that hardline stance like racism and sexism often requires and other social justice issues that you just sort of alluded to? That's where I'm interested in working out. And because I've seen, I guess, that there is this issue and it can cause some interesting discussions or debates or even divisive discussions and arguments and things in spaces, and people can have very differing views on it. And trying to work out, what is a, you know, minimum standard of spaces that we are trying to create versus what's just a personal view that
personal
you can hold.
Personal differences, yeah. And I think, you know, this doesn't relate to us because we're not antinatalists, but I think there might be antinatalists out there who, for them, they're questioning, is it a hard line that vegans at a minimum should be antinatalists?
Yeah, things like that. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like in the crossover, like, yeah, that's what I'm interested in, and hopefully we can find out today.
Yep. So I thought I would, before we get into it, I'll just mention two books that I've read that have kind of informed a lot of the background thinking that I did, and so I'll, you know, refer to these, the writers of these books throughout, and if you're interested, check out these books. So the first one is called After the Spike, Population Progress and the Case for People by Dean Spears and Michael Jeruso. They are demographers and economists, and they write about kind of projections of where the human population is going and what that potentially means for the future. They are much more human-centric than I personally am. So I think people listening who care a lot about animals might not agree with the conclusions that they come to or some of the arguments they make in terms of, you know, in the title they say The Case for People. I don't think they kind of, you know, care about or consider animals enough in their book. Yeah. But I think at the very least, kind of reading the data, reading about the data that they, their projections for the future is quite interesting. And then another one is a book, Veganicism Against All Oppression Everywhere All the Time by Nathan Poirier. And Nathan was on two previous FOS episodes.
Right.
So Veganicism Against All Oppression Everywhere All the Time with Nathan Poirier and More Veganicism Part 2 with Nathan Poirier. So, yeah, maybe check out those episodes, check out that book. So I think I'll start actually instead of talking about antinatalism by kind of talking about pronatalism.
Okay.
So maybe like the way that veganism or you know, transgender, for example, these are terms that are much more prominent because they're outside of the norm, whereas terms like carnism, they're, you know, just the norm of eating meat, or cisgender being the gender that you, that aligns with the one you're assigned at birth, they are terms that maybe the main, or yeah, cisgender has changed over time, but the norm is usually the one that has is less likely to have a name given to it. So I think you know, it's probably worth pointing out,
because people typically just call it
normal, yeah,
rather
exactly.
than giving it a name. And so to antinatalism, antinatalism
is different because it kind of goes against
what
society's
was the norm.
Norms, I think.
Yeah.
So I think it's worth pointing out that our society is very pronatalist. People are very much pressured to couple up and procreate, live in nuclear families and raise their children in nuclear families. And, yeah, a quote from the book Veganicism is, pronatalism is overwhelmingly coercive in that it pressures others to procreate even if they do not want children or think that they would be good parents. So yeah, I think that's probably something worth keeping in mind if you come across like kind of antinatalist sentiment, that it's kind of a correction potentially to
a swinging of the pendulum the other way.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a reaction against the what was just called normal, but now has a term called pronatalism. As we were talking about before the show, actually, you can even expand it more than just the individual, even to societies and countries and governments.
Like
we've seen histories of where governments during like wartime, they want to increase the population, they tell people to have more babies, or even just for general, you know, economy and growth of capitalism and and things, they'll try and encourage like increased population sizes like year on year of their jurisdictions, whether that's migration or birth rates, like they probably look at both. So, but it's just ways that pronatalism is commonly seen as the norm.
Yes.
And more than just on an individual, like you were right on everything you said, but it was like even just outside that nuclear family or just individual pressure, there can be a societal pressure to keep having babies.
Exactly. I agree. I guess, like maybe a bit of a caveat to that, though, is that birth rates worldwide are decelerating, if not falling. So I think the way I kind of see it is that culturally we're still pretty pronatalist, even if we're less so than in the past. It's definitely more, you know, especially in the where we live in Melbourne, for example, in Australia. I think it's, you know, it seems like it's much more acceptable just to not have children and much more the norm, but still you do still get that kind of pressure to that it's normal to couple up and have kids, and something that
but it's a fairly recent change, isn't it?
I think so.
It's in the last couple of generations,
like
rather
of decades. Exactly.
And it tends to be more wealthy countries or highly educated countries or regions or people with just
those are the ones that have whose birth rates have fallen, but it is across all like all countries of the world that birth rates are like decelerating, if not falling. So in the book After the Spike by Spears and Geruso, they show that, you know, like maybe in countries where you know, maybe even 50 years ago people were having like 6 to 9 children, today they're having like 3 or 4 children or maybe 2 children. And so that is still like pretty significant in terms of what it means for the population. I guess just a basic thing to consider is that like the replacement rate of humans is every, you know, roughly on average every 2 people having 2 children is the replacement rate. So even if you've got a lot of people not having any children or having 1 child, and you've still got, you know, various people having 3 or 4, if the average is below 2, that means that we're below replacement rate. That means that the population will eventually fall, and that is the direction.
And in case people weren't aware, like replacement rate is just a term meaning that if that replacement rate is at about 2, I think it is, is the sort of the neutral level, where it means that a population will stay the same size, because it means two people will have two children, and then when they die, like it normally means that it's replacing the population rather than increasing,
especially
or decreasing.
If infant mortality is low, which it is.
Yeah, I think normally
across
it's
the world.
To cater for that, it's normally like 2.1 or something is like the replacement rate that's actually neutral.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I guess to kind of make sense of this, like, okay, well, society's still pretty pronatalist, but birth rates are decelerating, if not falling. Spears and Jeruso, in their book, they theorize and kind of demonstrate that, you know, for many people, especially women, the opportunity cost of having children is increasingly high. The more that quality of life improves, the more that, not necessarily that having children is a bad option, but just not having children is still a good alternative.
A valid option.
A valid option. You're still going to have like a good, meaningful and fulfilled life. And so, you know, even if plenty of people are still choosing to have children, if at a group level more and more people are just deciding, oh, I just don't need to have children, that, you know, that leads on a population level to the birth rates.
Yeah.
Falling.
Also, along with like birth control increasing
exactly.
in quality and options, as well as just rights for women increasing with availability to birth control or abortion or things like that.
They all contribute, I guess, to... Well, yeah, birth control kind of makes it a choice to the number of children you have. You have more even say over it. And then the other factors kind of factor into, like, is my life going to be better with any children at all, or with, like, one or two children, or with, you know, like, five or six children. Do we want to go to a song?
Yeah, we'll have a song break.
All right, so this first song is called Sally's Pigeons by Cyndi Lauper. This is a song about reproductive justice. It's about a friend of Lauper's who had an abortion, or like a back alley abortion, and passed away. So yeah, this is really a reproductive justice song.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science, and scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Do you have a few children's picture books or footy boots that your kids have outgrown but want to find them a loving home? Well, drop them in at 3CR and put them in the books and boots bin. Books and Boots regularly sends pre-loved children's picture books and sports footwear to remote and regional First Nations communities and children across the country. Contact us at Books and Boots or go to the website www.booksandboots.org.au. We love a good book.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. I'm Lottie and I'm here with Trev today, and today we're talking about antinatalism and veganism and human population. So, before the break we kind of defined and talked a bit about pronatalism. So now I guess we'll jump a bit more into antinatalism.
Yep.
So I guess the basic premise of like unconditional in all scenarios antinatalism is that life has pleasure and suffering. Someone who was never born can't regret never living, or they can't resent not experiencing the pleasures of living, while someone alive can regret living and regret the suffering that they experience. Yeah. And, you know, since we can't guarantee that someone's life is going to be more positive than negative, the antinatalist view is that it's more cruel to bring people into the world than to not. So what do you think of that, Trev?
I initially think of, like, so instead of life, like, imagine playing a game. So it's like, oh, you might, like, there's a game that you can play, and it's like, well, if you play the game, you might win, you might lose, you might enjoy it, you might not enjoy it. But so it's better to just not play the game at all, because you don't know what's going to happen, and just sit there and just be bored. Like, that's sort of like a similar, like, I know it's about life, so you can't be bored and you can't, but it's that like that, you know, going without is somehow better than,
safer,
than a chance at something good. And I feel like that's just, it's such a strange, almost like a, I don't know, it just doesn't seem...
I think it's hard to sit with. I think it's hard to swallow as people who enjoy living. And
it seems to go against that whole desire to live. Like, you know, we see in both animals and humans, there's a
drive to keep
a drive to be alive and not die. Yeah. Like most people see death as a something to avoid anyway, at least.
Yeah.
So it seems to go against that.
Yeah.
Which has a strong, like, doesn't really sit with me.
Yeah. Yes. And I also have that kind of like gut feeling of like, I find it hard to accept. I do appreciate some aspects of it where I think it's reasonable to consider that, well, someone who's never born can't regret not living. And so I think that's maybe like a logical way to push back on, so maybe pronatalist views that are out there that like we have a duty to bring people into the world and give them good lives, things like that.
Yeah.
But I don't kind of see that as like in and of itself, well, the risks are too high and therefore it's just always unethical to bring children into the world.
It seems to place such a heavy emphasis on suffering
that
it outweighs everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
And it seems like at the, I don't always like using this word, but it seems like an extreme view of life.
I think
that suffering is such the predominating like feeling or experience, and that it's negative or always mostly negative. And that the chance of it being positive is
not worth the risk.
And obviously then unlikely. Because I guess that's the assumption, is that you're not going to have this view if you think that 99% of people are going to be happy and there's just 1% of people that aren't happy, but we have to protect that 1% of people from actually happening that have a shit life. So we're going to make everyone die so that those 1% of people don't suffer. Like, I feel like that's not where
they're coming. I think some antinatalists might feel that way. And to clarify, they're not saying people should die, but just they shouldn't be born in the first place. But yes, I think...
Correct. Maybe die. Like, extinct is a better word than
to
die.
To go extinct. Yeah. The species dying out, I guess. Yeah. I think some things that come to mind for me is that, you know, I guess my experience is that the times that have been like hard in my life, I've managed to like create meaning out of them.
Mm.
I don't regret like every single time that I've suffered or like gone through a hard period. I think a lot of humans can create meaning out of suffering and hardships.
Yeah.
We don't know what animals' experiences are, so they might also do this, but we do see
signs of animals trying to live and trying to avoid death.
Yes, definitely trying to avoid death.
Not always, like sometimes you see animals that do. I remember hearing one example of an animal who was in captivity that started ramming their head against the wall. So You definitely do see circumstances. Like, to be clear, like, I'm not against, I don't know if this is a controversial view, but I'm not against suicide. Like, I feel like people should have the choice if they want to live or not. And it should be their choice. I don't think suicide should be made illegal. I don't think there should be a stigma against it. Because if someone actually doesn't want to live, like, obviously within reason, like, you know, you want to make sure that they've made an informed decision. They're not just spur of the moment or under the influence of something or... Because of ill mental health and all sorts of things, it can be.
But
in a general sense, I think that people being able to choose when they've had enough life, I don't see anything terribly wrong with that. So I can see some of the points where it's coming from, but I think to put it as a blanket statement that everyone should avoid life because life in general is suffering.
Yeah.
Seems too swinging the pendulum too far that way.
Yep. Yeah.
It's a really big topic, isn't it?
Yeah.
No wonder we're struggling to fit it all in time.
Yeah, but exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I guess then, you know, following pronatalism, antenatalism, you know, middle ground there is reproductive choice, so that, you know, we don't have a duty or we shouldn't be pressuring people either way to procreate or not. Mm. And this is where my values fall. So yeah. I think people, you know, ideally people will have babies because it aligns with their values or their interests or their life goals, not just because. And I think that society does kind of just pressure people into having children just because. Mm. I think it's important that we remove those pressures. We yeah. allow people to make meaning out of life without having children,
yeah.
If they so wish. Yeah, and an interesting article I came across was this was in the Sunday Morning Herald and by Zoya Patel. They wrote an article that says, if you're on the fence about having kids, don't do it. So their experience was that they were kind of on the fence. They did end up having a child and, you know, they said, I really love my son, but it's not really accurate what some people say that, like, oh, I can't imagine my life without him. You know, they were like, I actually can imagine my life without him. And I think it also would have been like a good life. So I don't regret having a child. But like, if you're someone who's really not bothered either way, like parenting is just really, really hard and there's lots of sacrifices.
Big commitment, a big decision. Yeah.
So just think about that and, you know, don't be afraid to not have children if you're just not really feeling it.
I think that's where I would fit at the moment is because as I said, I came onto this show briefly talking to Lottie beforehand twice about this issue and I'm really interested in the issue, but I haven't got a fully formed opinion fleshed out all the way. So that's why I wanted to get involved in the show. And my intuitive spot at the moment, or from hearing what you've just said, I think that before adopting a more aggressive or strong stance, I think, as we just sort of said, trying to first remove the current stigmas and barriers to people wanting to be child-free and having it so that there's as neutral as possible a society that people are in to be able to make their own free choice of whether they actually want to have kids or not, including pressures from parents, from family, from government, from everything. I think that would be the first step. And maybe then reevaluate where we are then. And do we need to go further?
Do we need to go further? Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, do we want to go to a song now?
Yeah.
Yep, and then I think
we'll go to another song.
Yep.
What's the second one you've chosen?
So this next song is called Mercy, Mercy Me, The Ecology by Marvin Gaye. This has the lyric, what about this overcrowded land? How much more abuse from man can she stand? And in the next segment, I think I'm going to kind of push back a little bit on this narrative that, you know, that we're overcrowded and maybe think about things in a slightly different way. You're listening to Freedom of Species.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
Y+ Pride Victoria is a not-for-profit organisation dedicated to equality and justice for multigender attracted people, including bi, pan, regardless of label, or no label at all. We organise community events and advocate for better policies and services. Y+ Pride runs discussion groups which offer a safe and fun space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your sexual identity, and provide peer support. Y+ Pride is especially keen to hear from multi-gender attracted people in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Y+ Pride are tax deductible. For more information, visit our website at biplusprideVic.org.au, email info@biplusprideVic.org.au, or find us on Facebook or Instagram.
A 3CR supporter.
I'm bisexual.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. Today, I'm here, Lottie, and Trev's here, talking about antinatalism and humans' impact on the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, now let's talk a little bit about the idea of antinatalism, maybe conditional antinatalism, to go back to the definitions I had before, the idea that in the world as it currently is, with the negative impact that humans are having on other species and the planet, the idea that, you know, people maybe have a duty not to have children as a kind of harm reduction.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I get this as a premise, and I'm definitely not trying to talk anyone into having children. I guess I want to kind of talk through some of the numbers and just make sure we kind of have the right context and we're kind of aware of like the scale of things when we're arguing for this as like an environmental solution. So just a few numbers. So there are about 8.3 billion humans alive today.
Yeah.
The most recent projections from the United Nations estimate that global human population is going to peak in the mid-2080s at 10.4 billion people. So that's, you know, 2 billion extra people.
Yeah.
But that's where it's expected to peak. And the human population is not on this, like, runaway train of just, like, getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's so not even exponentially increasing anymore. I think the exponential increase already happened in the past.
Yes, and
now
happened.
We are on a slowdown.
The growth is slowing and will reach, if you think of it as like
a bell curve,
bell curve, we're reaching the peak, which means that the growth is slowing.
Yeah.
And so inevitably, once we reach that peak, that means that human population will fall, and if nothing drastic changes in people's choices to have an ability to choose to have children, that will eventually exponentially fall even.
Wow.
And you know, we can't predict the future. We don't know if people's choices will change, but there isn't really anything like obvious right now stopping that like exponential decrease a few centuries into the future.
Okay.
And so, yeah, Spears and Jeruso in the book After the Spike, they kind of talk through that. So if you're interested in those numbers, check out that book. And yeah, like I said, they kind of make the argument that they prefer the idea of human population stabilization at some level, whether that be, you know, 8 billion, 6 billion somewhere.
But after the peak. Like on its way down to try and stabilize.
Yes, they're not advocating. They're not advocating for like growth beyond the peak
or intervention before the peak, as such. Even maybe.
Well, I think their view is that maybe we do need intervention.
Okay.
To actually move the
needle.
Soften
the peak a bit or something. Yeah,
but I don't necessarily have that view. I think that the future could turn out lots of different ways. It could turn out that human population declines a lot, and that might be kind of a net benefit for other species on the planet. It could be that humans manage to live more harmoniously with other species, and so a stabilized population at some number is going to be also positive.
There's a lot of moving parts, so to speak.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of moving parts. So I don't really choose to like, I don't really want to spend my time thinking too much into the future. I'm more interested in like the here and now.
Yeah.
I think fair enough if people want to have that really long-term view. But yeah, I think we need to be aware that there's lots of moving parts, like you said. I guess, and then in terms of this view, so in the lyric of the song we just listened to, Mercy, Mercy Me by Marvin Gaye, this overcrowded land, just to put things into a little bit of context there, in all of the world's habitable land, urbanization, so people living in cities, Trev, do you want to guess how what percentage of the planet's habitable land is made up of urbanization?
I would guess 20%.
1%.
1%.
Yes.
Wow.
So, and something to consider also is that dense city living, even if we think of it as like less natural, it is actually more environmentally sustainable
for sure. Yeah.
When it comes to using less land, infringing less on natural land.
Yeah.
It's more energy efficient in terms of energy use. If we're living in apartment buildings where we're sharing walls with each other,
yeah,
less like heating and cooling gets wasted. It can be, you know, it's more efficient in terms of transportation, not needing to like travel very long distances in cars. So 1% of the world's, of the planet's habitable land is urbanization. 46% of the world's habitable land is used for agriculture. And
wow,
about 3/4 of that is animal agriculture and feed. So this means that we could reduce the amount of habitable land we're using on the planet to 1/4 of that. So about from like 46% to about 12% of the planet if we switched to a vegan food system.
Yeah.
And so if we think about this in terms of the population, well, what if we had another like 2 billion people? What if we, you know, when we reach that peak in the 2080s.
That's an extra 1/4, isn't it, of our population,
exactly,
roughly.
And so under a vegan food system, that would be the difference between 12% of the planet's habitable land versus 15%.
Yeah.
If we stay in the current food system, it's going to be the difference between like 46% and like 55% or something. So the more that we stay the way we are now and live inefficiently, yes, the more that more humans on the planet make a difference.
Mm. But is it the most important factor?
Yes, and I think it is not. I think it's definitely not a good approach to focus on human population instead of other strategies that are essential, like vegan food systems, dense urban living and things like that.
And especially because on its own, it doesn't actually mean anything in terms of environmental impact. Like, it's an easy, like, little, you know, quip to try and, like, you know, snazzy little one-liner or something to say, like, reduce
the
population.
That's the best thing you can do, not have a child.
Yeah,
yes.
But as you say, it's all these other factors that actually influence what your impact on the environment is. It's not just you existing.
Yeah.
It's how you exist and what systems are you existing within.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
They're a lot more important.
Yeah, yeah. Another scenario that was modelled in the After the Spike book and also in a short article that I'll post in the show notes is that so human depopulation via lower birth rates, it's going to be too slow and too late to have a meaningful effect on climate change. So that kind of makes sense if we think about it. If everyone immediately stopped having children on the planet, it's still going to take years for the global population to drop because people need to die.
Yep.
We don't want to kill people faster than they already are.
Mm.
I think we can all agree on that. Yeah. So, you know, for example, if everyone stopped having children, it would take about 16 years for the human population to drop from 8 billion to 7 billion.
Yeah.
So we need to act fast on climate change. And so we can't wait around for a reduced population.
That's a perfect response, which is not going to happen. Like, that's magically
exactly.
Everyone
that's
on the planet agreeing
anyway.
In unison that we're going to all stop right now, which is impossible to happen.
Yeah.
But the best case scenario is only that, what's that, a 1/8 reduction.
Yeah, in about 16 years. Yeah, and I think lots of people who are arguing for human depopulation would probably still think that 7 billion people is too many. Like, I don't think people are saying 7 billion's fine, 8 billion was where we reached.
Well, even if you're just looking at environmental impact, reducing
past,
it by 1/8 is not a big
dint,
if you know what I mean.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, another thing in this article that I'll share is that so Hannah Ritchie, who wrote this article, she modelled what she considered a pretty realistic scenario in terms of where the planet is going in terms of decarbonising in over the next decades. She modelled that the difference in global temperatures between having a couple billion more people or not in the year 220 is going to be 0.1% degrees Celsius. So I think we just really need to keep in mind that, so this isn't the difference between you having a child and not having a child is 0.1%, like 0.1 degrees Celsius. It's the difference between like 2 billion extra people on the planet.
Yeah.
I think we just really need to keep in mind, are we getting it the best bang for our buck for different strategies of advocating for the environment? My opinion is that advocating for a vegan food system, to me, that's a priority because I think that's something a lot of people still haven't accepted.
Yeah.
But of course, I also think we should be electrifying energy systems, renewable energy, things like that.
It seems like overall talk of population levels and talk of antinatalism is almost like a derailment from the real issues because it's focusing on such a, like, as you said, it doesn't have a direct impact on the environment. It only has an indirect impact depending on what systems we're living in. So let's change those systems. Let's focus on those systems.
Yeah, that's the way I see it. And I just urge people, if they're still going to, be advocating for depopulation, I ask people to be really careful that you're not derailing other solutions or kind of giving people the chance to kind of moral license that, oh, well, I'm not going to have a child, so it's okay that I just keep, eating meat and driving my car everywhere and things like that. I think it's really important that we're focusing on here and now actions for the environment, for climate, also to reduce animal suffering in the world.
We're running out of time, but on our initial conversation about this, Lottie, you said something that really stuck with me, which is people, if they make a decision to be child-free, that's not something that you make a decision once and that's it. You could then change your mind in 10 years, in 5 years, and decide to have multiple children, even though you've lived 5 years as an antinatalist or as a, a child-free person. And that could change. And then that impact would be whatever impact you think you had is then gone or reversed the other way because you've decided to have three or four children.
Yeah. So for those 10 years that you thought, well, it's okay that I'm not a vegan because I'm not going to have kids.
Yeah.
If you just wake up one day.
Change your mind. You haven't locked in any benefits.
Yes.
Whereas if you live a vegan diet and lifestyle, you've locked in less environmental impact for all of those years that you're doing. And you can't undo that.
Mm.
Not easily anyway. You'd have to switch to a drastically more wasteful lifestyle to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard to do.
Yeah. Yes. So I think that's kind of the message I want to be sending is that we really want to be focusing on here and now efforts for animals and for the environment.
Yeah.
I think we can also agree on system level changes that are probably going to reduce birth rates or to some extent, or at least give people more choice in not having children, like education and careers for women and girls, accessible birth control and abortion.
And these are things that are happening and trending anyway,
yes, exactly.
But accelerating them would be good.
Yeah.
But
just we can support them. We can agree on those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So great topic.
I think we'll leave it there. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Let us know what you think as well.
Yes.
It is an issue we hear about in vegan circles a lot.
Yep.
And where you think the crossover is. But there'll be a part two.
Yes, there will be. So this last song is called King by Florence and the Machine. This is a song that celebrates being child-free. Stay tuned for Rotations, where you'll hear some more music as well. Thanks for joining, Trev. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.